Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I am Yu Yunzhan, host of our monthly podcast, Zhonghua Mundus, that brings you recent updates about China's economy. As usual, I am with our senior fellow, Alicia Garcia Herrero. Hi, Alicia, how are you?
Hello, how are you, Yu Yun?
Very good. Nice to see you. We're also glad to have with us today Claudio Feijo, Jean Monnet Chair of Technology Diplomacy and Digital Sovereignty at the Technical University of Madrid. Nice to meet you, Claudio, and welcome to The Sound of Economics.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me. Pleasure.
Thank you for being here with us today. So today we are diving into innovation in critical technologies. Critical technologies, including artificial intelligence, semiconductors, and quantum computing, are attracting attention because of their indispensable nature and their role in national security strategies. Alicia, in your recent working papers, you compare China, the United States, and the European Union in these technologies and their subfields. Could you maybe walk us through a bit of your findings? Where do China, the EU, and the US stand in this tech race? And who are leading in what areas?
So, first of all, these are long and kind of complicated working papers. So the beauty of this podcast is that I'm going to try to summarize it all in a couple of minutes, and that's it. So we basically take all of the patents in different registries, whether it's the US or Europe or, you know, international registry, and focus on critical technologies, as you rightly pointed out. Not only because they are absolutely essential, but also because they're at the core of economic security, whether it's the US, Europe, frankly, even China, although we may not have the list for China, but it is there. We all know that these technologies, in the case of Europe, by the way, also biotechnologies included, but we didn't have the resources to cover it. So we cover, as you said it rightly, quantum, AI, and semiconductors. And it would be, you know, the way people tend to do this is to take patents and citations and put them together and see, you know, try to measure the quality of the patents. Because if we only look at number, China by far, you know, excels, and we would end the paper quite quickly. China excels in everything. But we all know that, you know, number and quantity and quality might not be the same thing. Thus, we try to measure not only the quality, but how pathbreaking these patents are. And to do that, we do not look at scientific publications because these are very new technologies. So, you know, you won't have them cited many, many times sometimes. And still, it might be a pathbreaking innovation. So we use large language models to identify the most relevant innovations and then classify them in subsectors, not only AI generally, but subsectors, Gen AI or aerial vision or, you know, video processing, you name it, in these three fields. To make a long story short, I would generally argue the US still excels, but China is already driving the innovation in some subsectors. In semis, where actually more generally they lead more than the US, but because we treat every subsector in the same way. So fab, same weight as design. But, you know, most people will tell you design has more value added. So if you, which we don't do in the results, but if we were to really take into account value added, maybe for semis we would be in this, you know, about the same. Okay. But again, with very large differences in subsectors. The US fully dominates design, but China is doing quite a lot in fabrication. Let's be frank, we're missing Taiwan here because we our sample does not include Taiwan. Thus, we can't really tell whether China dominates in fabrication. Maybe not, because a large player is missing. But that's semis. AI, Gen AI, the US dominates big time. It dominates in a lot of other fields of AI, but China dominates in video processing, image processing, and in aerial vision, which is both basically used for autonomous driving. So China has a very clear kind of dominance of things China, we know China does well, yeah? part of that is, frankly speaking, surveillance, but you can think about it more broadly, yeah? And by the way, in the second paper, which I'll introduce very briefly, we even look at which companies are behind these critical, we call them critical innovations. So interestingly, for video processing, guess, ByteDance. You know, it is very clear who is behind this. For quantum, and here's the good news for Europe. So get ready. I tend not to give very good news for Europe in this podcast. So I was thinking, gosh, don't forget this, Alicia, because for once, you know, and here you go. For quantum technology, Europe ranks, and it's the only thing, no other field or subfield in AI or semiconductors, but in quantum, Europe ranks as high as China for many of the subfields, and especially photonics. And you know, because we're both from Spain, we know that this is, in fact, University of Valencia stands out in the innovators. I'm bragging here. It's the only Spanish one there, so I'm going to stop here. But you know what I mean? That there are some subsectors in quantum where Europe actually does quite well. Let's not, how would I say, cheer too much, because the absolute dominant force in quantum is still the US. So we're comparing Europe and China here. Yeah, that's it. Now, and I finish here. So you can see in the second paper, all of the companies in Europe, just to not to end with the University of Valencia, we have Ericsson dominating in the three fields. So by the way, in Europe, there's more like telecom companies, or in China, Huawei. But in the US, it's all tech companies, only tech companies. It's like, wow. I mean, what would the US do without these tech companies? Because all of the innovation is concentrated there. And they innovate in the three fields, like Ericsson, in the three, not in one, or, you know. And in Europe, just to finish, beyond Ericsson, there's also this... Sorry, let me see if I can pronounce it properly. If not, it's the nuclear agency in France. So it's a kind of public, more public institutions in Europe than elsewhere. China is in between, and US is all private. So this is kind of, and now to end, and I promise, I know I've been too long. What is the most important finding? You know, for me, I would even say, I don't know, I want to hear Claudio's views, but okay, say we do not dominate these radical technologies. But as long as we could replicate these amazing patents, or, you know, these amazing ideas quickly, I would still feel, okay, maybe we can do it. The most desperate finding of these papers is the second part on the spillovers, meaning if the US comes with an amazing radical novelty, which we understand is a patent, but patents get replicated. In fact, China replicates those patents in 150 days average, even with export controls in many cases. I mean, export controls, just so that people don't think that I don't know what I'm talking about, which could be, but are on products, not innovation. But we have a coming paper where we relate products and patents. And that's why I can make this statement. But you won't read that in the paper. We only look at whether a patent is replicated elsewhere quickly. The answer is never quickly in Europe. Never. 365 days on average. And by the way, and bear with me, because this is the worst of the worst that I have to say today. This is even true within Europe. You know what I mean? A patent in Valencia replicated, I don't know, in the Netherlands or the other way around, would take on average 365 days, which is by far more than any other combination. For example, our patents get replicated in China or the US at a much faster rate. And US, China, China, US, etc. So we have a problem here. I'm not saying our results are enough to, you know, to confirm that this is exactly the average day. I mean, I'm not claiming that. But I can see from this data that there is an issue with the how our ecosystem is, how close it is within Europe, but also how close we are to the US or China for that matter. And by the way, they don't maybe they're closer to us, meaning that they can still know what's going on in Europe good enough to replicate our patterns, but it is asymmetric. So that's the finding. I hope I was clear. And sorry that it took longer than I thought, but still much less than reading these two long papers.
It's okay. You just merged all of my questions about the paper, but I think this is a good introduction to the working papers. Like you said, these are very long papers, so we'll be sure to link the papers in our show notes. So the listeners, if you're interested in the methodology and then to go deeper into what Alicia has entailed, you can always find it in our show notes.
Sorry, Yuyun, this is really, really important. I forgot to say, there's two co-authors, Robin Shindowski and Mikhail Krinz-Jansutsk. For everybody to know that Mikhail is really the angel of this project because he's an amazing data scientist, and I just don't want to forget this. And that is all. I leave the floor to Claudio.
Yes, indeed. Claudia, let me ask you to come in to comment on Alicia's and co-authors' findings on the paper about China's innovation process and how do these radical novelties spell.
Thanks. I have been following China's development on critical technologies for more than 10 years now, including my years, no? My years in China and my working together with the top technology and science and technology universities and also science and tech parks all over China. So first, basically, I tend to agree with the findings in the papers, but there are nuances, no? There are some elements maybe interesting to discuss. First, and Alicia already mentioned that, AI, quantum, semiconductors, but there are other critical, I would say, enabling technologies. I like this idea of enabling technologies. So the technology, they might have horizontal effects and effect in many sectors. And therefore, they are not only posed for leadership, but they are components of potential hegemony, no? In this increasing conflict that we have geopolitically in the world. So not only these three, for example, Alicia mentioned bio, but I will put also something very important for Europe, that is energy, the energy sector at large. That I think this is also important. Second comment is patents, all of us, we know this perfectly well. They are a proxy. But they are not a perfect proxy for research on what is happening in the evolution, critical technologies. So they don't tell the whole story. They're a proxy, sometimes better, sometimes not so much. And in the case of the EU in particular, because basically, to a large extent, this is not, sometimes it happens, supposedly we don't patent software. So this always creates a little bit of a gap when we make comparisons, especially around technologies like AI, you know, and we need to have this in mind. But these are maybe small comments. For me, the most important idea, it is that a different type of innovation. There's a cycle of innovation, no? There's a whole theory about how innovation happens, no? The generation of innovation, and then how is disseminated and the last step adopted. And I think this distinction is important. In particular, from these breakthroughs to adoption, dissemination and adoption, China has been extremely good in something that we can call incremental innovations. So these steps number 2 and 3, not in the breakthroughs, at least if we look a little bit historically, maybe recently is moving in this direction. And why this is so? Because China has been using wisely its advantages. So economies of scale, different type of regulation and all type of public support and at different points, no, in this evolution of the innovation across this value chain. It's only recently where they are moving, no, in more in towards breakthroughs and maybe beyond patents. We have maybe the latest example might be DeepSeek, no, where there are a number of new things in the way AI models are trained. The case of the EU, if we make the comparison, is exactly the opposite. We are good. This is my understanding in talent. And this is reflected, of course, in different parts of this reports. but we are extremely bad at taking these ideas, even sometimes breakthroughs, important patents, they have an effect, taking them to the market. We have a lot of difficulties and a lot of gaps. So this is, I think, a correct picture, but I will insist in this distinction between these two type of innovations that are relevant also for Europe and the international comparisons. Another finding that is the speed, the replication of radical novelties. This is fantastic because again there are gaps. So I have few to say about how things move in Europe so slowly compared to other places. But I have a comment on the effect of sanctions between the US and China. Patents do have a delay, so it will be weird if we are already seeing the effect of sanctions in patents. It will take a while until we see this. And exactly which effect, we don't know. It might be even the opposite, no? This is academicians discussing all the time. Will increase the pace of innovation in China, then you have the replication part. But in terms of the amount of innovation and amount of disruptive innovation, because you are forced to take a different path, will this happen because of sanctions? That would be super interesting, no? Not only to see how patents are being replicated, if we are creating like parallel paths, no? In terms of innovation, that would be a suggestion for further studies in at Bruegel, probably. And then there are nuances. And let's take the example of quantum communication, that I think of quantum, no? That is important. You have said that the position of the EU in general is not so bad in this area. And in fact, I think we are leading. Not only that, in some subsectors, in particular, you mentioned photonics. I usually prefer to say quantum communication. So basically in quantum, you have three big parts: quantum computing, quantum communication, and quantum sensors. But in quantum communications, I think Europe even can say we are leading. This was because of a decision, because the US initially was not so interested in quantum communication because they thought probably this was not so relevant, while China, yes, especially they are betting on quantum communications using satellites. But here in Europe, I think we are leading in not satellite type of quantum communications with also many patents and many new companies and research centers in different parts of Europe trying to invest in this area. Same happens in semis, no, in semiconductors, where the value chain is much, much, much more complicated. But then there are opportunities here and there to have a critical position. In fact, I like something from China. They call it something like in English will be something like the new trade theory or something like this. That is, hey, you don't need to have everything. You don't have to have innovations all through the value chain. You only need to have innovations at critical places. We can say bottlenecks or maybe choke points if we want to be a little bit more dramatic. But this is enough to be part of the negotiations, because this is basically what is happening. You need to have play a little bit in this poker type of game we are now everybody playing, but you need some way to participate. And this, I think, in the case of Europe, comparing what is happening and looking at patents and looking what is happening to in other geographies, it will be enough if we are able to have some of these key bottlenecks. So the situation is half empty bottle, but also a little bit half full if we want to be optimistic.
Thank you very much for that, Claudio. I find it very interesting when you said the sanction, in fact, we won't know it yet. And it's true that with technology is evolving so fast, and we sometimes just can't really predict what's going on, right? It also kind of remind me of China's innovation in the electric vehicles, because basically combustion engine was such a leading sector in Europe. So they kind of like gave up and then went on their way to the electric vehicle sector. And now they are kind of one of the leading players in this field. Alicia, do you want to come back to this and address some of Claudia's point?
Well, first of all, thank you, Claudio, because this is a much broader view compared to what we did. And I think it's very important. So actually, there's no doubt that China is very rapidly adapting basically the innovation behind basic research, to put it. And that is, I mean, if I were to replicate what we did with other types of sectors which are more applied, I'm sure that China would dominate more. And the best example is green tech, but there's others. So in a way, what we're trying to do is to really answer a question where there's much more doubt about China's ability, as you said, on the core innovation, on the basic innovation, which is the basis for everything else. And if that was the deal, wow, China didn't do bad at all. I don't think it's concerning, because it's good that China is innovating, it's good for the world, but it's a bit concerning for Europe that our role is so limited, especially in AI and semiconductors. Now, we could also, you know, play kind of China game and say, you know what, I don't need to be an early innovator in the value chain. I can adapt radical innovation quickly. Well, you know, the question is, are we good at that? Because again, not everybody needs to innovate in every field. I mean, I don't think that's by no means what I was trying to say. But of course, in a world, and this is how the paper starts, of great power competition, if you are an area of the size of the others, because Europe together is of the size of the US and China, the fact that you're so behind in those innovations that eventually are the basis for export controls, yeah, beyond critical raw materials, which, you know, we could discuss. But, you know, the core kind of leverage from the US side is about that. In our case, you know, we always say, oh, we have lithography, ASML, but the reality is that this is not the same, because ASML does not even appear in our, because they hardly patent. That's not their model. That doesn't mean that they're not a bottleneck, but it is much harder to grasp. Yeah, because you need to stop literally the export of the actual machine. Well, you know, if you work with high-end innovation, it could be much more targeted. Yeah. So you may not need to hurt the company so much, because you can do a very specific component. So the fact that we're not there, for me, not only is a reflection of where we stand in innovation, it's also a reflection of the amount of leverage we have through innovation, which is low. That is also something that I think we need to reflect upon.
Yeah, on this, maybe I can complement a little bit. Of course, you know, Alice, we tend to agree, no? Basically, but there's something interesting. There's sometimes neglected, like an inverse path. So you have this incremental innovation. These incremental innovations are also connected to some industrial base. So you really have industrialized whatever is happening in a particular domain. And with this know-how, this experience, in economics terms, this learning economies, you find out about new challenges, new critical points, and then you can come back and find breakthroughs. So sometimes this is forgotten. Being or being, let's say, farther along this industrialized path is not only, it gives you not only an edge about incremental innovation, it's also letting you know which are, let's say, the next wave of challenges, and being the first to able. And maybe this is what we are seeing in China, no? And I can put a couple of examples outside the scope of the reports. For example, in direct current transmission of energy, that's the blackout in Spain, very very recent. China already reflected on this. You want to put photovoltaics and you want to put wind turbines into the system. It's much, much convenient to send it without alternate current, no? Without this 50 hertz that is very complicated to fine-tune with the rest of the system. You send it in direct current. So they are already working there, and they are already having a lot of patents for this technology that will be critical if we want to go into low carbon economy. Another example, they have realized about data centers so hungry for energy. So they are now innovating heavily in micro, very small nuclear reactors that you can plug beside, and they are all even putting them on boats maybe in the direction of Africa to provide energy from boats into a number of things. So this is an example of how incremental innovation, because you are at the forefront, you have a head start in an area, then it can be feedback into some type of disruptive innovations. And I think this display is what you miss when you lose your industrial base. And this is an important lesson for Europe. We are still on time. And if for the US, maybe even a little bit too late, because how are they going to take back this from the big tech? But this big tech is very far from industrial as such, no?
Yeah.
Now that, Claudio, you mentioned about industrial policy and then US, Elisa, you also mentioned that the innovations all come from the big tech companies. So maybe here it's a good time to talk about how different countries have different innovation methods. In your paper, you mentioned that in the US, it's mostly by big tech companies, and in Europe and in China, it's mostly through innovation, so like maybe public-funded research. Could we take a moment just to reflect on what are the pros and cons of different methods?
I would say something that is maybe, I think it's obvious, but people tend to forget. I don't think it is really important where the innovation happens. But if we look to disruptive type of innovation, you know, these breakthroughs, you know, that is the subject of these papers, they always have some component of science, maybe basic research, but also some applied research. And it's difficult to have this in place if you don't have some type of public support. It doesn't matter if the public support happens in a research center, a university, or happens in a lab within a company, but it requires some long-term support, because you are not sure. This in the terminology of consultants, this horizon 3 type of problem. So you don't really know if it's going to be useful in the marketing in which shape. So in fact, I think we are returning to industrial policies, and we might even we disguise the name, no? In China, they don't care, no? They put the align, no? The public and private interest from some plans from the top down. But in our case, in Europe, we call it different ways, and also even in the US, in this sense, they are becoming socialists, no? Because there are industrial policies now, obviously, with the CHIPS Act and you name it. So I think breakthroughs are very connected with this type of public support. So we are entering in a time, in an era of industrial policies. Then, if you look, you move forward in this cycle of innovation into incremental innovations, then you need the market. You need this co-evolution of the technology, the innovations, technology base, and the market. This goes together. And then, as I mentioned, then you might go back and find new breakthroughs. This is the key thing. If you miss some of these parts, everything should work together. This is the ecosystem. Then you are in danger and you are unable to produce or to move at the pace. This is my initial approach. Maybe, Alicia, you have more details to add.
No, I think that's very much in line. Let me add perhaps just from my perspective of what I figured looking at the most innovative companies in this paper, which again is very narrow. These are very, you know, high-end sectors. So it by no means it might replicate what you see more generally, yeah, in the innovation ecosystems of the European, US and China. But for this very small group, something really striking for me. We found something striking is that when you look at Chinese names, you find, first of all, companies that you would not expect. Let me give you an example. Ping An, an insurance company. How can an insurance company be so innovative? Well, we know it's a very innovative company, but not to the point of in the ranking of the 10 most innovative, in my definition, yeah, radical novelties, so really, really in critical technologies. But of course, because Ping An is developing massive AI capabilities, and it might end up being the most AI-centric insurance company in the world. So what this shows is that China's approach to innovation is very much like visionary, if I may. So there is a company that really, wow, you know, and I don't think we can argue that Ping An is Huawei. I mean, if we have doubts about Huawei, what origin of Huawei, you name it. Okay, what about Ping An? It cannot only be the same story. So, you know, we need to take this seriously. There's companies in China that are extremely innovative at the top of the top end, even if they're not in principle in sectors where you would expect this innovation. That is one. The other thing is, and that might be less positive, but still very important for Europe, you then have very small companies, very unknown companies. Some appear and disappear. Why? Because I think China is very agile in also reacting to export controls or other types of constraints. So, you know, the researchers, one day work, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but you can see from the data that this is very, Ericsson is always there. Ericsson is Ericsson. But in China, these are not research centers, Claudio. These are companies. So it's you know, and we had a big case, if you recall, this company called Tsinghua, which was a semiconductor kind of research center, and suddenly defaulted. They raised a lot of money because, again, this is not a research center. This is not just public money. This is real money raised by Chinese companies, which are very small. You wonder how they raise all of this money. So they, just to make a long story short, China has some peculiarities that are entrenched in their economic model that we cannot replicate. We just cannot replicate. We may even not want to replicate, you know, because of course, to be very frank, in the case of Tsinghua, there was fraud because nobody knew what this company was doing. So I'm not saying they're all like that, but of course it creates incentives. So that's something I think we need to kind of figure, that first, China has amazing companies and they go against the wind, you know, and then it has weird companies. these two things at the same time. And for Europe, and I end here, I think one lesson is scale. There is no private funding. In fact, Ericsson, if you look at their annual report, is among the most generous company in terms of R&D expenditure. And you see it. But many companies have very little R&D expenditure. And why? Because they just cannot kind of lift it. Because these tech companies in the US, I mean, the amount of profits they have, I mean, you know what I mean? They're funding beyond, of course, integrated markets, VCs or private, but it's not only about that. It's that they have their oligopolies. We don't have that in Europe. You know, maybe we had it in the past with telecom companies, but then, you know, the rainy days are here. They don't have the resources. So we don't have the cash cows. I would call it like this. Beyond, of course, we know capital market union, all of that, we all know. But we also don't have cash cows. And that is a problem, I feel, because there's nobody there with enough resources to suddenly say, I don't care if this project is unsuccessful, I will put more money on it. Yeah, and that is something the US has, we don't have.
You know, one of my favorite songs of all time is Against the Wind. So I like that you mentioned that. I mean, I'm an old crocodile already. So I'm going to challenge a little bit what you have said. I think we shouldn't replicate China. It's impossible, but there are a good deal of learning. And I was 3 weeks ago, I was in the European Parliament explaining innovation paths in AI, lessons learned from China, something like this. Huh? And everybody in China, and also here in Europe, we thought, we know we are laggards, we are delayed in AI, because everything is about muscles, no? It's about having this huge computing power centers with now in the hundreds of thousands of GPUs, and you got it or not, and it's impossible to keep the pace of innovation in AI, no? In the training the models, if you don't have that, So we are going to be delayed. We need our own sovereign models, but we are going to be delayed. We believe in this narrative that was coming from the US until China make us, no, like waking up from this dream and told us, hey, there are other paths. And there are many other paths. And this is an important message for learning for Europe in this ecosystem of innovation in China, no? That you have described, no? With companies you won't expect there, and also small companies that appear and disappear, and sometimes they do fantastic things, and sometimes they just take the money and run, no? Who knows? So, for instance, industrial application of AI. So China thought, okay, we are going to be delayed in these big models, but we are going to be the first one in applying this to our industrial sectors. This is basically the example of Pingan. We have our own data, and then using our data with all the ingredients of AI, that basically are three, no? The algorithms, the computing power, and the data, then maybe we might end up in something different, and we might keep on leading, because it's, again, incremental innovation. There's a whole cycle of innovation. This is an example. Now in Europe, we are going to try to replicate a little bit of that with the AI factories. No, let's see how it works. No, to try to provide means for innovation to a small and medium companies that cannot afford, but they have data and their own understanding of a particular sector. That might be interesting. But there are other paths. For instance, the AI agents. China is already in the AI agents for a while. No, there are companies already in the stock markets for years moving in this direction. So now we have realized this is going to be the next big thing. No, in this AI agents, they don't depend on the model training. They are more in the inference side. That is another important message. And the inference side is not so much about computing power. You require memory. So you can use chips, semiconductors that are not so good, but they need more capabilities in the part of memory. So inference, once you have some decent models, and some of them are open source, so you can already use them, and then you fine-tune during the inference, during the reasoning, maybe this is another interesting path. And there are more. For instance, in my conferences, I always mention spatial reasoning. So this is more complicated. Text is, in a way, is linear. So you get tokens, and you relate these tokens with something else, and you come to conclusions about how all the thing fits together. But the spatial or 3D is more complicated, because you need to relate objects, and you need to relate and link them and how in different layers. So this is more challenging. And because it's more challenging, it's delayed. So we can maybe in Europe leap forward. What are the Chinese doing? They have already companies, you know, some of these famous six little dragons, you know, in Zhejiang, no? In Hangzhou. They are doing things like this. They are working in this other area. So this is an important message for you. Sometimes you are a little bit delayed, and this is the beauty of your reports, and you see the whole picture. Maybe you can leap forward, no? Because sometimes understanding where are the gaps, you can put the resources there and run. So there are learnings, and this is a little bit my message of hope.
Thank you very much, both. So we talked a lot about different paths to innovation, and Alisa, also in your papers, you mentioned that from creation to adoption to the technology, Europe is sometimes very slow in this process. So what would be your advice to kind of accelerate this process too, that we can really see the critical technologies being into patent?
So first, I want to tell Claudio that, of course, we have a lot to learn from China. Maybe I wasn't clear. I was just saying that when it comes to these companies that appear and disappear, and they may appear because, you know, they may disappear because they are unprofitable, but I actually, having done the study, I think there's other reasons. And this is related to the government support in sectors where there are constraints from the US. Maybe we should do the same if we had those constraints from the US, you know, like, so maybe it's all about learning. But I was just only referring to that part, meaning that China is in a special situation where we are not so far. We may end up there. So you're right. Maybe even on that one, we need to learn from China. But of course, on the rest, I fully agree. And this brings me to Yuyun's question, which is, what should we do? And for me, I mean, it starts with making it easier. Yeah. I mean, we have overregulated a sector that we don't have not even developed, which is, in my view, you know, making it even harder. We've already talked about the difficulties of financing. So, you know, we should find ways, of course, AI factories, but we need private money. I mean, Macron, in a way, showed it very clearly at the AI summit, yeah? But this was like big chunks of money from sovereign wealth funds. I mean, we want pure private money. I mean, money that comes because they believe in what Europe might be doing. So for that, I think we need to change our financing system. I mean, the way our financial system is organized, especially at the very end, meaning from the VC and then private equity. I mean, at that level, I think that's extremely important. And then finally, we need to integrate our innovation ecosystem. Yes, we have horizons, but you know, that's not enough. I mean, we need much more collaboration among European member states on innovation. These are, frankly speaking, still national policies to a large extent. And I think we cannot compete if we don't kind of integrate innovation capabilities much more, because it's a question of scale. If not, instead of having the US and China, we would have Israel, but we don't in these critical technologies, in patents, because it's a question of scale. So that's why I think we need to take this very seriously. We need to integrate our innovation ecosystem so much more.
The good thing is that we know perfectly well which is the recipe. We have all the analysis. The analysis are fantastic, drug reports, letter report, and also all of us insiders, we know exactly what we should do. And this is good news, because it's only doing the right things and putting the resources. But I would say, before saying a couple of practical things, because at the end of the day, I'm an engineer, so I need to say practical things. I want to say something important. I don't think it's a matter of regulation. Regulation in Europe is connected with some of our values and our approach. The problem is bureaucracy. I wouldn't say it's regulation the problem. The problem is all the red tape it's connected with. But I will focus in taking out the bureaucracy, but I will keep a little bit of the regulation. I think this is part of our European path. And in terms of practical things, you have said almost everything, but I'll put a practical example. No, my former colleagues at the European Commission, they are now producing some type of report on exactly, you know, what should be done about entrepreneurship and innovation ecosystem in Europe. And there are small things. If we allow the pension funds to use 0.5 or 0.1% of their funds in, let's say, high risk, like venture VC funds, we will be in the equal foot that compared to the US. It's just that. I mean, and then I ask, why we are not doing this? And say, well, you know, when the fund was established, then there were these conditions, and then you need to change this. So again, bureaucracy. It's not that we don't know what to do. Or at the start of the value chain, we are going to play. I'm trying to champion this in Spain and also at European level, something I call a startup factories, that in fact is a policy that is happening in Germany, because one university isolated or research center, they don't have critical mass enough because they produce maybe 2, 3, 5 good projects per year. But this is not enough, because all of them are high risk. So you need to put them together to produce at least 10, 15 per year. So then the venture capitalists, they will bet on that and at least will get a decent return on investment or on one of them. But you need at least 10. And these are the figures. 8 if you are super good at choosing the right project. But one university, even one top university or research center isolated, is not enough. So in Germany, they are doing this, and we are trying to make this happen at European level. So we know the recipes, and in fact, they are not difficult. It's just starting and doing that. So in that sense, I'm optimistic, because the conditions are the conditions that we take finally, not only the decision, but we put them in practice. So let's see if this happens in the next years. And then Bruegel will need to do many other reports checking if we are in the right path, I think.
Thank you very much for this interesting conversation. I am Yuyun Zhan, and I'm with Bruegel's Alicia Garcia Herrero and Claudio Feijo from the Technical University of Madrid. For listeners, you can find all our research on China at bruegel.org and sign up for Zhonghua Mundus, our monthly China podcast and newsletter, with link in the show notes. Until next time, bye-bye.